Chapter 20 of Visiting Frank's Avatar. 3 weeks had passed since the Fearless Five had visited the planet Psizzik and observed a significant part of the life of Jigen the Great, Shimon's avatar. Amelia, David, Pete, and Frank spent many hours at Amelia's house on the Potomac, discussing what they had seen and learned about that planet and the activities of Shim's avatar. Shim was back in Israel, continuing his work as prime minister. Things have been going well with Israel and the Palestinians since the accord established by the United States had been established. There was a lot of arguing, which was to be expected. But both sides became more prosperous, and the terrible memories of past wars were still fresh enough that no one wanted to rock that boat again. This change in status meant that Shimon could entertain the idea of leaving his position as prime minister and begin to truly enjoy life. He and Amelia were still unmarried, but they wanted to do that soon and head to the Brando Resort in the South Pacific for an extended honeymoon. Unfortunately, now that Amelia was president of the United States, they could not just get married and escape anywhere, particularly to the South Pacific. Shim had learned a lot from their spiritual timeline trip to Psizzik. More importantly, the lessons he learned from that journey also precipitated an inflow of memories from other lives. He rapidly emerged into a mature, albeit new, spiritual individual on today's earth. This means that he automatically and instantly saw everything and everyone around him as relevant, very important, and extremely valuable to him and everyone else. His ego receded as he grew into that awareness, and his empathy for all souls bubbled up to the surface. This was the characteristic opposite of a professional politician, and it was obvious to him that he no longer wanted to be a politician. He wanted to do something meaningful to him and enjoyable with his life, and being the prime minister of Israel or anywhere else didn't fit that bill anymore. He would discuss this with Amelia when he returned to her home in the United States. David had introduced them to the art of telepathy, and of course, there was the phone. But there was nothing quite as good as being together in person for a good talk, and when you could reach out and touch someone you were talking to. The remaining four of the Fearless Five met at Amelia's house when David suggested they take the next trip on the spiritual timeline to review one or more of Frank's reincarnations. Frank would have better learned about who he was during this trip, and the rest of the team would also have informed themselves of those facts. It would improve our feelings about each other and allow us to absorb facts and emotional reactions to each of our lives. Everyone agreed, but Amelia said she wanted Shim to be part of all their adventures together. David agreed and reminded her it didn't matter where he was physically when they were venturing on these trips at any time. He only needed to tell us that he wanted to be included in any adventure and would travel with us, regardless of what he was doing then. David explained that Shim could be heading up a meeting in his parliament. In less than a microsecond of receiving our spiritual prompt, he would join us on the spiritual timeline, and regardless of how long, in our traveling perception, we were gone, no time would pass on his presence in parliament. So when we returned, Shim would still be doing whatever he does in that parliament, with no noticeable change evident to him or those participating. Amelia exclaimed that this was marvelous news and would let Shim know whenever David set a date and time for such ventures. He immediately said they would leave tomorrow morning after breakfast because he didn't want to start any trip on an empty stomach. He knew Bertha made unbelievable pancakes, so he and Pete would stay at Amelia's house because the security there was as good or better than the White House. Amelia told David that she had to be at the White House all day tomorrow and would stay overnight rather than return to the Potomac house. Besides, it was a good idea for both the president and vice president not to remain in the same place together unless absolutely necessary. She also knew that the spiritual timeline trip could be scheduled regardless of where they all were when it was done. David agreed and telepathically suggested to the other four that they schedule the spiritual timeline trip for 8:30 a.m. All agreed they wanted to go. The Fearless Five, which included one United States president, one United States vice president, one secretary of state for the United States, one Israeli prime minister, and one chief of security and intelligence for the president of the United States, were all attending to early morning tasks when they felt a gentle pull on their consciousness. Their next awareness was being on an island in the middle of an ocean. As usual, the Akashic Records was open to answering questions that people sometimes didn't even know they had. So, the answer to where they were was given to them immediately. They were on an atoll in the Marshall Islands called Rongelap, along with a sister atoll Rongerik. These islands were best known in modern times for hosting gigantic atomic blasts of megaton rating research monitoring sites. This fact meant the blast yield of these explosions was the million tons of TNT instead of the kiloton or thousand tons of TNT that exploded over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan, to end World War II. The Fearless Five arrived on Rongelap in 1943, before the United States began testing nuclear bombs. The islands were paradises, although perhaps less beautiful than Hawaii, Bora Bora, or the Fiji Islands. Those are larger islands with high mountains and tropical forests. But atolls have their allure for people because they are generally smaller, usually with little or no mountains, and rarely overwhelm those who stay or visit them. The formation of an atoll typically assumes that a previous volcano had sunk and left a ring of islands above water encircling the central sunken volcano. A lagoon is in the middle, full of crystal clear water and spectacular reefs. Although mountain structures are usually magnificent and often spectacular, they mean that soil and debris can flow into the mountains surrounding waters via rivers, etc., which generally works against the clear water potential in areas where the rivers enter the lagoons. Individuals can choose which island type they prefer, but there is no denying that most atolls are spectacular in their own right and provide a great dose of paradise to those who prefer them. The Fearless Five found themselves on Rongelap because David wanted Frank primarily, but all of them as well, to see where Frank had essential life experiences relevant to his spiritual evolutionary journey in his current life. They walked along the beach, and although they were not in physical form, David instructed the Akashic Record to impart all the sensations they would have in bodily form to register every detail within their consciousness. The sand was so white, warm, and clean that Amelia was inspired to imagine her feet shoeless. She waded into the surf, and to her great delight, the wet sand penetrated upwards between her toes. The others had to follow her lead. Suddenly, they were just five teenagers frolicking in the surf line. This wasn't why David wanted to come here, but having this much pleasure as long as they were here was super great. As they ran around each other and pushed one another into the surf, they all realized what a great release this was from their day-to-day existence. They were not presidents, prime ministers, secretary of state, or other leaders. Even though they liked and loved their jobs, they understood that there was a physical and emotional cost to staying in them. Being a child again and reveling in a paradise like this with your favorite people is how we were all supposed to be. And when it was desperately needed, it was all the more enjoyable. Amelia wasn't sure how they played at being kids again, but when she heard some children running into the surf, obviously to join the fun. But she soon realized that they were in their theater of exuberant carousing and not that of the Fearless Five. Most of the completely nude children were mainly boys. They were little more than toddlers at about 4 or 5, but they acted as though they belonged in the semi-aquatic world as much as they were on land, and perhaps they did. And then, on the shore behind them, was another band of what appeared to be teenagers yelling at each other and leaping into the water. A couple of women on the beach, most likely mothers, were screaming at the teenagers to keep the young ones in mind. The teens replied that they would, and they all headed out to where the youngsters were cavorting, as was the Fearless Five, which they could not see. The teenagers appeared to be led by the oldest of the group, although they were all of a similar age. This boy stood out because he was a little taller, lean, and muscular. He was very handsome by any standard, and as he yelled and smiled, you could see that his teeth were sparkling and brilliant white. His eyes also seemed to sparkle as he laughed, and they were pure blue, which seemed odd on an island boy. Now that the two groups of island boys began to merge, the Fearless Five noticed they were getting very close to the beginning of the island side of the coral reef. Amelia was convinced that this was getting too close to the coral reef for comfort as far as the youngsters were concerned. But then she saw the older boys, led by the taller, handsome boy who was obviously in charge, headed after the youngsters. That leader then swam onto the reef and started exploring anything of interest. Undoubtedly, this was his home, and he was very knowledgeable about the neighborhood. All the other youngsters and teens followed him around the reef and began their coral reef explorations. Amelia projected a telepathic conversation to her team and commented that the lead boy was proficient in swimming, which was to be expected. Still, he was also obviously taking charge of all the others. The rest of the five agreed with her, as they had noticed the older teen's leadership attitude. David then told Frank that he had just met his avatar. His avatar's name is Anita Lukilma. His friends have shortened the name to Ani, so that is what he goes by. David also said that Ani will eventually become the leader of Rongelap, and he will have to cope with a lot because of this. But for now, he is gliding down the far side of the coral reef and swimming through myriad schools of fish, which barely move out of the way even when people or large fish, often predators, push their way through the massive, dense schools of multicolorful reef fish. The rest of the children followed him and his buddies and seemed to separate into little swimming pods, with each teenager leading a pod. Even the youngest child was adept at diving the reef, and the fearless five followed them to see and perhaps learn from them. The colors of the schools of fish almost overwhelmed the eyes and the mind. In just a few minutes cruising the reef, you come upon the bright green, nearly luminous lizardfishes, angelfishes of every color and every kind of colorful design, but always beautiful, and other neon-colored cleaner wrasses, darting in and out of the mouths of grouper, barracuda, turtles, murray eels, sharks, and numerous other fish. Uncountable beds of anemones commingled with the rest of the corals, hosting orange and white clownfish, better known worldwide as Nemo, thanks to the Disney movies. The clownfish darted in and out of the poisonous anemone clusters. Such familiarity would kill most other fish, but Nemo and his anemone hosts were relatively safe together. Quite a few white-tipped reef sharks were gliding about the reef, but they didn't seem interested in the small children or the teenagers, and the children didn't seem overly concerned about the sharks either. It was like a pack of dogs on land, simply milling about but not likely to bite. The fearless five enjoyed swimming in or around the reef because they were programmed to feel the water, hear the sounds, and absorb the experience, just as the children did. Then they saw a giant tiger shark entering the party. As these large sharks are prone to do, it was very cautious. It started to make a wide loop around the swimmers, examining them and closing in on them as they circled. The children and teenagers were aware of this massive predator and started rising to the surface. One by one, they took a large gulp of air, sank several feet under the surface, and began swimming closer to each other, creating a larger mass to confront the tiger shark. The teenagers positioned themselves outside the mass of youngsters, keeping them in the center to better protect them. Amelia saw a youngster, the smallest of them, swimming very hard to join the others. She had fallen behind the others somehow, but was determined to join the group. A tiger shark is designed to notice targets that lag behind a school of fish and begin to slowly close in on the little girl. Humans were not part of his diet, but when any possible meal was thrashing about in the water and attempting to join a school mass, their instinct was to take a chance and grab it. The fearless five were also beginning to panic as they watched this situation unfold. Amelia telepathically yelled at David and asked if there was anything they could do. David told her they could not interfere but suggested they relax as much as possible and watch this play out. The tiger shark moved closer to the child, who was still 30 feet or less from the other children. He projected an appearance and position of starting to move in for the kill when Ani, who had broken off a large truncheon of black coral fan and had it solidly gripped in his hand, headed for the little girl. He swam as fast as he could to place himself between her and the shark. This act confused the tiger shark, who wasn't used to aggressive prey, except for the occasional killer whale called Orca, or a porpoise protecting her young. He veered away from Ani and began to turn back towards the girl, who was still attempting to join the others in their protected mass. Now the shark became quite aggressive and returned to attack, but found that Ani was determined to protect his friends who were in the process of poking their heads above water for air, and then immediately returning under the surface to protect themselves and also see their elders in action. Ani surprised the tiger shark by aggressively swimming directly towards him. As he got close to the enormous creature, he swung the solid black coral truncheon with all his might against the resistance of the water and hit the shark directly in the eye, a susceptible area for all sharks. That contact hurt him to the highest degree, and in an instant, he decided that making a morsel of this little girl wasn't worth it, and then left the scene quickly. Ani and the girl joined the rest of their family and immediately started exploring the reef again. Pete asked the others what they thought of what happened here. If I had been there physically, I would have headed directly for shore once the tiger shark had fled. How did they know that it would not return wanting to tear the entire child bait ball to pieces? David told Pete and the others that they needed to relate these surroundings to ours when we were children. If a dog threatened a group of them in their street while they were playing, and an adult came and chased the mean dog away, they would most likely have been satisfied and continued playing now that they were safe again. They all thought about that and decided to agree that it made sense. The Fearless Five stayed with the children for some time and enjoyed the vast numbers of fish, shellfish, and other wonders of the coral reef that constantly meandered by and changed while they explored. Eventually, they all started to tire and then headed back to shore. Once on the beach, the children all threw off their exhausted selves and started running and playing on the sandy beach as if they were starting the day. It brought great joy to Amelia to see how carefree and happy they were. She wondered how they could have experienced that dangerous interaction with the tiger shark and not run home to tell their family and friends. David explained that they were living the life they were meant to live and accepted the good and the bad. He also wanted them to know just how different these people and their cultures were from ours. Unlike most other societies on Earth, the peoples of the Marshall Islands were empathic rather than callous and insensitive. They loved and nurtured their people, islands, and water worlds. They had reverence for their island homes, the sea that fed them, and where they found joy. Most of all, they loved their family, and the family was not just specific individuals, but all that resided on their island. The children considered whatever home they happened to be in at the time as their home, and the adults in that home considered all children now in the house or elsewhere on the island to also be their children. Blood was not the determining factor of what was family. Love was. These islanders all loved one another, as Christians elsewhere say their people must. But most people in off-island cultures rarely live by that creed, and quite often don't even attempt to attain this most Christian of tenets. The Fearless Five decided to stay to watch the adults prepare the evening meal. The women had taken fish obtained by the men that day and cleaned them of all unwanted parts that could be given to the dogs or become part of a compost pile, eventually creating a feast of vegetables. The women laid the fish fillet on a banana leaf and seasoned it with various flavors, and then plantains, still in their skins, were placed next to the fish. They are rolled inside the banana skin, often with other vegetables. A fire had been created in the sand, and when the embers were fully afire, the flames were extinguished with sand, and the filled banana leaves were placed over the sandy embers, and then more sand was placed on top until an oven was created. The women all knew how long the banana leaves needed to be in this sand oven, and when the time came, they were removed, and the feast was on. The islander dinners were leisurely and never rushed because there was little else to do in the evenings. Some men enjoyed night fishing, which often became a social time to chew betel nuts mixed with lime. Betel nuts were chewed to produce a sense of well-being, euphoria, and heightened alertness. Betel nut is a stimulant drug made from the nuts of an areca palm, which means it speeds up the messages traveling between the brain and the body. It created a closeness and camaraderie between the men. It also wreaked havoc on and in the body and eventually meant disaster for their teeth, but not to bother, as these betel nut nighttime get-together sessions resulted in a fine evening. The Fearless Five found they were concerned about betel nut chewing. While contemplating such dreadful subjects, David said it was time to move on, and they immediately found themselves on Bikini Atoll, about 40 miles west of Rongelap. It was March 1954, and the Bikini Atoll residents had previously been removed in preparation for Castle Bravo, which was the most giant hydrogen bomb ever detonated by the United States. David informed them that Castle Bravo yielded 15 megatons, which is 15 million tons of TNT equivalent. The bombs dropped over Hiroshima, Japan, were 16 kilotons, or 16,000 tons of TNT equivalent. The Nagasaki drop was 21 tons of TNT equivalent. The people of Bikini Atoll were removed from their homeland in 1946 to make way for the testing of nuclear weapons by the United States. The subsequent half-century exodus of the Bikini people included a two-year stay on Rongerik Atoll next to Rongelap, where near starvation resulted, and then to Kwajalein Atoll, where they lived in tents beside a runway used by the U.S. military. In 1948, they relocated to Kili, a small, isolated, 200-acre island owned by the U.S. Trust Territory government. They could never return to their home island or be rejoined by many family members that were taken away from them in this separation scenario. David then showed his mates something they would always remember. They were standing on the island of Bikini when Castle Bravo was detonated. If they had physically been there, they would have been immediately incinerated in the initial blast that combined and created a self-fueling fire wind. But they were standing within this maelstrom of a powerful, violent nuclear whirlpool, sucking in most solid objects around them, but leaving their spiritual bodies standing in place, unfazed. Their minds were convinced they would perish in this horrifying new world vision, and the image of fire and brimstone was foremost in their imagination. From their spiritual point of view, they saw fire, sand, and ocean water mixed with vegetation that used to exist on Bikini, swirling rapidly around them as they stood within this cyclone of destruction. Then, the Akashic Record, following a request from David, created a filter that isolated nuclear fallout particles to be seen as shimmering gold dots, so the Fearless Five could identify these highly toxic particles being created from solid pieces of pulverized coral reef, all manner of mint sea life, and other molecules of matter consisting of sand, weapons debris, and fission products. The Fearless Five observed these bright gold dots of nuclear fallout raining down on the people of Rongela, 40 miles from the blast and Udyrik Atolls, and a Japanese fishing vessel called Daigo Fukurimaru, translated as the Lucky Dragon Five, sailing in nearby waters. They were informed that this fallout occurred in one of two types: early fallout, which occurs within the first 24 hours after an explosion, and delayed fallout, which occurs days or years later. The more particulate or gaseous forms of fallout were to spread worldwide. They watched the island people on Rongelap and Udyrik being evacuated 3 days later, but not before the islanders were bathed in this golden radiological soup. When they were taken off the islands, they were vomiting, having diarrhea, and extensive skin burns. Many were experiencing hair loss. They took this extremely radioactive sickness with them to the atoll called Kwajalein. The Fearless Five were then shown the future of the crew that suffered acute radiation syndrome for several weeks after the Bravo test. All the Japanese sailors recovered from the immediate effects of the American test detonation, except for Kubayama Aikichi, the boat's chief radioman, who died in September 1954 from complications of radiation sickness. Then, the Fearless Five were back on Rongelap in 1957, when the Atomic Energy Commission returned the islanders to Rongelap from Kwajalein, where they had been living in tents alongside the runway. United States scientists later said, "The habitation of these people on the island will afford the most valuable ecological radiation data on the effects on human beings." The Fearless Five were shocked at this admission, and even more so when they saw that the United States decided to send their scientists, U.S. Air Force meteorologists, and other military and non-military personnel to Rongelap in 1958 for more tests, and also to become guinea pigs for nuclear testing data. This was not the epitome of empathy demonstrated by what many considered at the time to be the most benevolent and caring nation on Earth. The Fearless Five, now inserted in a type of moving reel of watching the progression of islanders affected by the fallout, began to see rates of Rongelap miscarriages and stillbirths occurring at twice the rate of unexposed women through 1958. Then, in 1963, thyroid tumors began appearing. And when the Fearless Five moved on to 1969, almost 69% of children who were under 10 in 1964 developed thyroid tumors. And all through 1958, with both American and Marshallese citizens living and working on Rongelap while the atomic energy forces were detonating hydrogen bombs 40 miles away in or near Bikini. The adverse effects continued to the next century for the islanders and the U.S. personnel stationed there. Many of those in charge of these horrific blasts said that there was value in seeing how the islanders and U.S. personnel working on the island would react to the radiation fallout. The reaction was terrible to behold. The Fearless Five saw no evacuations made by the United States even though they were requested. A Marshall Island senator, Jet Nanjane, requested evacuation from Rongelap, but the request was denied. Watching this, the Fearless Five nearly shouted for someone to do something. Amelia, currently the President of the United States, called out the loudest among them, but the others also cried in vain. Then, help came in the form of the Rainbow Warriors, a Greenpeace environmental ship that took it upon itself to make three trips to rescue and evacuate the Rongelap community and its houses, which were broken down into sections, to Mahado and Ibai Islands. For decades after this, many islanders and even U.S. military personnel had to be compensated by the United States as they began to develop cancers traced to these bomb blast fallout. The Fearless Five had seen enough of this awfulness. They returned to watching and observing Frank's avatar, Anatelu Kilma, on Rongelap. Almost two decades had gone by following Castle Bravo, and Ani, like most of the islanders, had his share of illness traced to radiation poison. The fallout on blast day was one thing, but the radiation penetrated Rongelap through its breadfruit, land crabs, coconuts, possibly bananas, and other edibles. He and his wife had three children, who fortunately seem to be free of the radiation curse. But it is still too early to say someone has dodged the bullet with this threat. Ani's wife developed thyroid cancer and died shortly after their third baby. But the Fearless Five followed Avi throughout his life by speeding up the spiritual timeline reference and were amazed and impressed that he could stay on a moral high. He never had to forgive anyone or even the people who did their best to destroy his islands with their damn bombs. The worst he ever said was when repeating another Marshall Island man who said, "Who are these people who scratch their matches on the face of God?" about the hydrogen bomb tests. To his end, Ari stayed above it all by helping others, loving people, forgiving people, and never doing anything to harm people. He was one of the kindest individuals ever to live. And if he had a fault, it was trusting people who shouldn't be trusted. With huge admiration for Ani in their minds, the Fearless Five decided to return to the starting point of this spiritual timeline venture. But not before David said to Frank, "After getting to know your avatar, Ani, we all know where you got to be such a trustworthy and beautiful friend. I speak for the rest of us when I tell you how much we love you, Frank." The other three of the Fearless Five telepathically wrapped their minds around Frank's spirit. And then they each appeared at the place and time they had left to come to the South Pacific island of Rongelap.